Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, it's time for political commentary. Our lovely friend Lara is on holiday, but we're lucky enough to be joined by David Slack again. Morena.
Special guest.
Morena, Rosetta.
Morning.
Morena, Lemily.
How are you?
I'm full of hot cross buns and very relaxed.
Wonderful. That's good to hear.
Good.
Lots happening in the world of politics, and I'm sure you've been following it all very closely. We're going to talk about the fuel crisis.
Yes, which is
a big topic at the moment.
It serves as a kind of a Rorschach.
Yeah.
I just realised I came up with that name without knowing how to pronounce it. let's call it litmus test of the government. You know, the question that you might have asked in the abstract until now was, how would these guys have handled COVID? Well, now we know. They'd have been shit at it. If it had been COVID, I think you'd have seen them do too little to begin with, and then tell us regretfully that it was after the deaths were in their thousands. It's now too late to do anything. You know, what we're seeing here with the fuel crisis is an opportunity to fix things swiftly in the immediate term and substantially in the longer term, because this is both a short-term problem and a long-term one.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is we've got the immediate strangling of supplies, not only for the fuel that gets the country moving around, but also the elements that go into a huge amount of production across the world, and all of those things are going to become harder to come by as the months go on. And we saw all of this in COVID as well. You know, once supply chains got disrupted, the inflation just took off. And just to digress for a second, any time inflation takes off as it did then, all kinds of people take the opportunity to exploit it. So it's not just the immediate problem of something being hard to get and therefore going up in price, but every other damn thing as well, or everybody saying, oh, well, my prices are going up a wee bit, so I'm going to shove them up a whole lot more too. And so we had that just shoved through the system for a couple of years at least, and took a long time to get back in its box, and now here it comes again. So that's one immediate problem. And one other thing that Rudy is saying is people look at it and they can see the price has gone up a great deal, diesel by 150%, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And say, oh, well, this is a bit of a worry, but, oh, well, it looks like we've still got stocks. Yes, for now, but there's a delayed reaction to all of these things, and you can see maps of world supply routes that people like Goldman Sachs have put together for the edification of us all, that show how, you know, a ship that had already set off will still arrive, but it's the ones that are now not coming that are the harbinger of how tough things might get. And it could get really tricky, and let's wait and see. Maybe it will be okay. And that's certainly what the government's saying. You know, on the one hand, they are saying we will take drastic measures if things get tougher, but they're not wanting to take the drastic measures at all if they don't have to. And more to the point, they're not doing anything to shift behaviour right now, which would be a really bloody good idea. For example, you could make public transport free, or at least put a huge subsidy on it, so that people shift from using petrol, if it's workable for them, to something else. And you do see a bit of that happening already. I notice at the bus stops I walk past that there are already a lot more people sitting waiting for them. I do see more people on bikes. We do have the capacity to do this for ourselves to some extent, but you can make it work a whole lot better. And we've also seen this in Auckland, at least, that when you do make public transport free for the weekend, which AT have done a couple of times, the central city just fills with people, because they've suddenly got the chance to bring their family in, and they do in their thousands. And it's really great. And of course, the more that goes on, the more you can encourage people to consider making part of the way they get around. And we have this kind of delusion that somehow public transport is much too costly, and the country can't afford to do it, or the city can't afford to do it. But when you apportion that over the per head cost of your citizens compared to the god-awful amount we spend on roads so that cars can go everywhere, it's actually a much more competitive argument than you might think.
100%. And
on top of all that, just to round out that first thought, because I'm saying that, you know, this is both an immediate problem and a long-term one that can be addressed, and they could be addressing the immediate one now, right now, but they're not. They could also, if they wanted to get a bit more imaginative, they could be, if they wanted to spend just some money, not a huge amount of money, but some, to get people changing their habits, it is always a bloody good idea to put people on bikes if bikes work for them. And, you know, as a long-term advocate for this, I've always struck people saying, oh, well, it doesn't work for me. And yes, of course, it doesn't work for everybody. But there has been such a defeatist approach to this that has essentially said, well, if it doesn't work for every last person, we're not going to try at all. And that's madness.
Which is, interesting, because the response from the government has actually been quite targeted in terms of providing support just for some families, right?
Mm.
If we're going to be selective about how we do targeted support, then, yeah, that can't really be an argument against supporting bike lanes or public transport.
Yeah.
Hell no. I mean, you know, the marvellous thing about both of those options is you can make it available for a great many people at a relatively affordable cost. And, you know, there's a supreme irony in this too, just for another digression, you know, that Nicola Willis has become this champion of not being universal because it's too costly. They are the party that gave us a universal superannuation deal instead of the very intelligent one that the Labor government of the early 1970s had set up and was about to go and had actually started, and if it had continued would mean that we would have wealth of, if not the levels of Norway right now, certainly as much as Singapore individually and as a shareholding nation hugely. But instead they made it a pay-as-you-go one, and it was available to everybody. And this is what Muldoon campaigned for in the 1975 election and rode it all the way to victory. And what it means is we now have rich people in Remuera who probably wouldn't even notice the difference in their accounts of the puny little amount that turns up each fortnight, but means the world to many old people who have no means of their own. And it means that we're spending more than $10 billion a year on this thing because it's just too politically untenable to say, oh, we're going to make it universally available. We can't change that. Meanwhile, here's Nicola Willis saying, we've got to make the fuel subsidies more targeted because this principle is unacceptable to us. Mm. The hypocrisy is vaulting. Anyway, that was a digression. The other point I thought was worth making is that, so you've got your short-term possibilities like public transport and getting people onto bikes, because that's a really neat transformative thing, and, you know, whether it be an electric bike or an acoustic, I love them both, and they both get you around and are great. You know, it is the perfect invention for transmitting the little energy you put coming out of your legs into carrying you a great distance. You can walk.
Go a long way on a bike.
You can go a really long way.
Really, really long way.
And as long as you've got halfway decent gear, you can do it on a sit house day like this just as much as you can on a lovely summer one.
Totally.
And it's magic, and it means that when you get there, it's not hard to find somewhere to park. It means that you're not spending vast amounts of money getting yourself from one place to another, taking your car from its car hutch to its little park at your work twice a day, and that's all it does. You know, we will look back one day at the weirdness of people spending $10,000, $30,000, $100,000 on a Toyota or a Ford Ranger so that they can drive it from their car hutch in the morning to the place where they work half an hour, let's say an hour, then leave it sitting there all day, then come back at the end of the day and repeat the process. Yeah. A huge amount of money to put into that, and that's before we get to the cost of the petrol going into it, which, of course, is the reason we're talking about all of this. Have I got time to talk about the long one, or have we rambled on too long already?
Give us a quick rundown.
Quick one is this. We could be having a abundant renewable energy in this country, and this has become a huge teachable moment or inspirational moment to say, because until now, trying to persuade people to see the huge potential of switching to renewable energy, which would be generated by the state, distributed by the state, sold by the state, and maybe enough to attract overseas businesses to come here as well, because we got so goddamn much of it from, say, wind, from water, from solar. Instead, people have said, "Oh, I don't know, it's too much money. We can't be doing that." When we can point to what's going on now and saying, "Are you shit scared about how much it's costing you to fill your tank? And would you like this country to run on a better way of energy?" They are much more likely to say yes, and we'll say, "Here's our plan. It's think big, but think big for the future, not one that's predicated on fuel that's about to run out."
I mean, yeah, it'd be expensive to get it all done in a day, but that's not realistic, is it?
No, that's right, and that's what I'm saying. We've both got our short-term things like PT and bikes, and we've got our long-term one, because this is going to go on being a problem, and that's, you know, a huge worry. But also it's a huge opportunity for us, and so we could be borrowing and investing in this over years to become absolutely massive in affordable, renewable, abundant energy that could, because energy is what drives your economy. And if we have a shitload of it, we can have a shitload of money. And that's the thing that that Luxon has been saying, wringing his hands and saying he wants. The answer's there in front of you, buddy.
100%.
I think this is a great opportunity, while we're encouraging people to be on their bikes, to say, if anyone's listening from their car, just be nice to that cyclist on the road, because they're just trying to avoid the fuel crisis and doing what they can to get by.
Don't be jealous that they're one step ahead.
You bet.
Very good. Hey, thank you so much, David. It's nice to have you back with us for a couple of weeks, and looking forward to catching up next week to talk politics.
Lovely.
Thanks,
have a good
David.
One. Ka kite.
Ciao.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.